Here we go. As the Big 12 tournament continues from T-Mobile Center in Kansas City, our guy, Matthew Postens, is here on the show, HeartlandCollegeSports.com. I'm Pete Mundo. Thanks, as always, for joining us and being a part of it. You know, Matthew, just to be transparent with our audience, this is going to air on the podcast and also, of course, on our radio affiliates across the entire Heartland. And it's the hardest show to do every single year because the Big 12 tournament's going on. And, you know, we've got radio stations carrying this on Thursday night, Friday morning, Saturday morning. So we have to be transparent in terms of our conversation. So let's just start here. Kansas State's the biggest bubble team in the Big 12 right now. They've beaten Texas as of our conversation. What more do they need to do to get into the NCAA tournament in your eyes?
Well, if you believe Jerry Palm and you believe Joe Lunardi, they need to beat Iowa State, which is their opponent in the quarterfinals. After the Texas win, they moved up from like the bubble staging area to like the first four out or the second four out. So they both seem to feel like Kansas State needs at least one more win. John Rothstein at CBS believes they need two more wins to get into the tournament. I feel like they need one. And the reason being is that if they were to beat Iowa State, that would be another quadrant and one win for them. I think that would give them five for the season. It would be a win against a top 10 ranked team on a neutral floor. It would give them another opportunity in a semifinal game where they, you know, they might end up playing like a Cincinnati, because Cincinnati beat Kansas on Wednesday night and they advanced into the quarterfinals. So, you know, to me, the Iowa State game is the big game for them. If they win that game, I think they've made enough of a case to get into the NCAA tournament. If they lose that game, then they're kind of at the mercy of whatever else happens around the country. And I don't think there are enough chess pieces on the board to move around to help get them in.
Yeah, I agree. I think they need to beat Iowa State, but then they should be in. I saw that Rothstein said that, and I thought it was ridiculous to think they need to win two more games to get in. But we'll see what happens. The Kansas Jayhawks lose to Cincinnati, not just lose, get absolutely blown out. Bill Self's body language was really bad with this game. Of course, they're without Dickinson, they're without McCuller, getting them healthy for the NCAA tournament. You saw this thing firsthand. You saw this team, this coaching staff firsthand. How bad is it right now for Kansas, and how loud are those alarm bells?
You know, I didn't think his body language was that bad, honestly, Wednesday night. I mean, obviously he was frustrated during the game, but after the game, he was really philosophical about it. He's like, you know, we didn't have Hunter, we didn't have Kevin, but I felt like we played good defense. They held Cincinnati to 35% shooting. The problem was they didn't hit shots. I mean, they had one good spell of offense probably in the first 8 to 9 minutes of the second half where they cut it down to two, and then they just couldn't get over the hump. And that's not having Hunter Dickinson, and that's not having Kevin McCuller on the floor. Bill Self feels like if he gets both of those guys back next week and he can start getting these guys to pump in some three-pointers again, he feels like they can make a run in the tournament. And I tend to agree with him, but they have not been a good three-point shooting team all season. The guy that they were hoping would be their consistent three-point threat, Nicholas Timberlake, just really hasn't materialized for them. He is shooting well below what he shot a year ago at his previous school. If anything else, that's what's going to keep them from advancing in the NCAA tournament. It's going to be their three-point shooting, not so much what Dickinson and McCuller can do for them. They can help them win a game or two, but their entire movement through the tournament is going to be dictated by how well they can shoot from distance. Bill Self firmly believes that. He did say, you know, over the next 8 days, we got to get our mojo back. That was the big takeaway. They've got some things they've got to reflect on, but I don't think he's thinking to himself, we're going to lose in the first round. I really firmly believe that he thinks Hunter Dickinson and Kevin McCuller will both be back next week, and then they'll be able to make some kind of run in the tournament.
You know, that makes sense, but you're right. I mean, this team, they have two problems. I mean, they have more than that probably, but they can't shoot the three, and frankly, they don't defend it well either. They're the fourth worst three-point shooting team in the Big 12, and they're the fourth worst three-point shooting defense in the Big 12. I mean, that is just horrible when you think about it. So yeah, it's very un-Bill Self and very un-Kansas-like with how they struggle this year. And I don't know, the ceiling could be a Sweet 16, maybe an Elite 8, but it certainly is not what we're used to seeing from this Kansas team, and not what anyone projected before the season when they were picked to win the league.
Yeah, no, I think Bill Self summed it up best Wednesday. He said, you know, inside of the free throw line, he loves their offensive efficiency and he loves their defensive efficiency.
Yeah.
But once you get 3-point line extended, everything just kind of falls apart. They're not very connected defensively. They don't shoot well on the offensive end. You know, teams like Cincinnati that can play inside out like they did the other night. And granted, no Dickinson, no McCullough, but they can play inside out and they can extend you. Those kinds of teams are going to give Kansas real trouble in the tournament.
They are. Kansas is still, per Lenardi, a 4 seed in the East. You know, could they fall to a 5 depending on what happens? I think they could. I don't think it's a big deal, though. This team is not going to, you know, succeed or fail based on being a 4 or a 5 seed. So I think Self did the right thing leaving these guys, McCullough and Dickinson, out this week and just try to get them ready for next week, right?
Yeah, I mean, he said Dickinson could not have played this week, or at least could not have played Wednesday night. He said that Dickinson should start conditioning in a couple of days. He should be ready to go next week. He said with McCullough, if this had been a quote-unquote more important game, or if this game had been played on a Friday or Saturday, he might have gone with the bone bruise in his knee. But, you know, he said once he knew Dickinson couldn't play Wednesday night, not playing McCullough was a really easy decision for him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good point. Matthew Postens is joining us here on the show as we roll through some Big 12 basketball talk. It's always good to have him on board as we continue the conversation here. Now, you look at where things are at right now in this conference. Well, let's start with the news here that Mike Boynton gets fired on Thursday as the Oklahoma State basketball coach. You and I talked about this a lot the last bunch of weeks, and we came to an agreement that Boynton was going to get one more year. As the weeks went on, I didn't think he was worthy of it, to be honest. But I also agreed with you that he would probably get one more year. The buyout was big. He's very well liked. And, you know, he's got some pieces coming back for next year. He gets fired on Thursday. Surprised, or as you alluded to in our private conversations this week, with the way the last couple of weeks went, that's a stench that it was apparently too hard to get out of the university's mouth.
Yeah, I am surprised, you know, still with the buyout. I think it was $8 million before April 1, and then it drops to $7 million after that, somewhere in that neighborhood. I think that was the figure that Tulsa World reported. I just kind of felt like with the goodwill that Boynton has built up just as a person, maybe not necessarily his performance on the floor, but the goodwill he built up in Stillwater as a person, I thought that would buy him one more year, along with the talent that he has. You know, people forget that recruiting class he just brought in is the number 14 recruiting class in the country. Well, the decision that Oklahoma State has made, it's really twofold. Number one, they feel as if they need to level up as a head coach and find somebody who can probably do a better job coaching on game day, making in-game adjustments, et cetera. That was one area where I felt like Mike Boynton still had room to grow in terms of just making those in-game adjustments that can make the difference between winning and losing. But now you put that entire recruiting class at risk. They're all freshmen. None of them have transferred, so they can go somewhere else if they please. Think of Jerome Tang 2 years ago when he was hired to replace Bruce Weber. He wanted all those guys to stay, and most of them stuck around until they made the head coach hiring. And then he lost 11 of the 13 kids that were there. So for the administration there at Oklahoma State, they are rolling the dice here. They can hire a coach that can, A, help them elevate the program, but also, B, keep this very talented freshman class together for at least another year to see if they can make an impact from the standpoint of, you know, those guys making progress and making, you know, making more progress on the court. Or maybe they don't care, and whoever they hire is going to work the transfer portal like Tang did, like McCaslin did this past year at Texas Tech, and try to get it done that way. It's a roll of the dice, because these days when you fire a head coach, most of those players scatter, you know, whether they have a transfer waiver to use or not. They tend to scatter. This is going to be a very long spring and summer in Stillwater for whoever gets that job.
So who's on the short list? I mean, one guy that comes to mind for me, and you're probably going to laugh, is Doug Gottlieb. I mean, every time this job is open, his name comes up. We know his alum ties. He does some coaching on the side. He's actually been helping Mike Boynton. I guess they're friends. Kind of awkward, but, like, who's on that list? First off, is Gottlieb on it, yes or no? And then if not, or either way, who else is?
Well, Gottlieb isn't on my list. Has he ever been a head coach anywhere? I don't think so. Has he ever been like a true assistant coach anywhere? No. I mean, his only tie is that he's an alum of Oklahoma State. And frankly, if I'm the administration there, that just isn't good enough for me. That's a recipe for having to find a new head coach in 2 or 3 years. Honestly, that's what I think that is. If I'm the administration there, or my first phone call is to Dusty May at FAU, he's probably going to say no because he's going to have a lot of options if he wants to move after this season. Then you look at Pat Kelsey at the College of Charleston. You look at a guy like Danny Sprinkle at Utah State. You look at Anthony Grant at Dayton. Those are some really interesting names to follow. And then if you're looking, you may have to go the assistant coach here, route here, because I don't know how much money they're going to have to play with when you consider Boynton's buyout. But one assistant coach to watch is John Jacobs, the associate head coach at Baylor. We all know what Jerome Tang has done. We all know what Grant McCaslin has done. Both of those guys were Scott Drew assistants. In fact, there are four different Scott Drew assistants in the game, and all of them have been successful. So if you want to hurt one of your conference rivals and get a coach who's probably ready for this moment, John Jacobs is probably the guy.
All right, Matthew Poston's on Heartland College Sports. It is always good to talk some Big 12 hoops with him. So last thing on this in particular, I mean, I was thinking about Oklahoma State basketball, and I don't think it's fair to call them the equivalent of Nebraska football, because Nebraska football has had so much more success over the long haul than Oklahoma State basketball. But when you talk about a program that used to be basketball first and does have a great history and has totally fallen flat here, really for the better part of the entire century, more or less, I think about Oklahoma State being a disappointment and then Indiana basketball being a disappointment. How much does that maybe factor in to the Oklahoma State administration's thought of, hey, we have been a basketball school and look how far we've fallen? Is it that as much as anything?
I'm sure that is part of the math. I mean, ever since Eddie Sutton left, this program has not been consistently successful. I mean, Eddie Sutton took them to the Final Four as recently as 15 years ago or so. I don't recall the exact year, but I mean, they've been consistently successful for a long time. And this is sort of, you know, for them, this is, you know, like you said, this is kind of their calling card program, men's basketball. They've got a rich, rich history in the game, and they're kind of like Louisville in that respect. Louisville, I think, sees themselves as a traditional power, and I see them as a traditional power, but they're in a rut right now. They're actually worse off than Oklahoma State, if we're being honest. And they're out there having to look for a new head coach. And whoever they hire, you've got to convince them that, A, you know, you're going to have everything that you need to be successful. And Mike Boynton has been kind of vociferous about the fact that he doesn't feel their NIL is where it needs to be, and that they really haven't had a lot of basketball facility improvements on campus since he's been the basketball coach. So, number one, you got to convince whoever takes the job that they're going to get the resources they need. But two, also that it's possible for them to reclaim the quote-unquote glory days there at Oklahoma State. The conference is changing. Four new schools come in July. Two of them at least are top 25 programs, if not a third. So the competition's only going to get steeper as those four new schools come in. And whoever takes this job needs to have the resources to get it done, and they need to know that they've got the faith of the administration there that, you know, it's a 4 or 5 year deal. I mean, yes, we've seen Tang and McCaslin both flip programs, but they're not looking for a 1 year flip. They're looking for a guy who's going to stay there for 4 or 5 years or longer and make them consistent winners again.
All right. So you look at this job, you look at West Virginia, which is also open, Matthew Poston's, which one's the better job?
Well, that's a really good question. I think
I think it's Oklahoma State. I think that program is bought in more so to its athletics right now, and more bought into the future success of where they want to be. I don't know. I think the Bob Huggins ending is still an awkward follow up to me that I wouldn't want to be a part of right now.
Well, I'll make the case for West Virginia then. So you're not following Bob Huggins. You're following Josh Eilert. And I made this point in a piece the other day. You know, that's probably the biggest favor Josh Eilert did to his replacement, which was not for him to not have to be the guy that follows Bob Huggins. Yes, Huggins will be around. Yes, he will be kind of a shadow over the program. But you're not directly following him. So you're not replacing the GOAT. You're replacing the guy who replaced the GOAT. Number two, their NIL efforts from the basketball standpoint are well ahead of where Oklahoma State is. I mean, part of the transfer reason they put together such a great transfer class is because of their NIL efforts. I feel like they've got – I've been on both campuses. I feel like the basketball facilities are a little bit better than West Virginia's – or, excuse me, Oklahoma State's. And I just feel like there's a little bit more hunger there in the short term from the administration and from the fan base because of what happened with Bob. They don't want to be down for long. And I think whoever gets that job is going to get everything they need to make it happen. I'm not 100% sure that the new coach at Oklahoma State will get that.
Okay. All right. Now, as for West Virginia, what direction do you think they should be looking here for their next head coach?
Well, I think they need to look for somebody who can, you know, take that program in a different direction in terms of player development. I think one thing they've really struggled with over the past few years is developing players over multiple years. They've had good transfers come in and make impacts, but, you know, in terms of homegrown players, they haven't done a really good job of that the last 3 or 4 years. And there's really fertile ground there in Ohio and West Virginia to bring in local guys and really develop them over the course of 2 or 3 years. So I think you're looking for somebody, you know, at a program like that, you want somebody that can develop players, that can make them, you know, appreciably better over 2, 3, 4 years and find ways to retain them. So the same list kind of holds true for West Virginia as it does for Oklahoma State. I don't think you're going to go out and get a high major head coach to come to West Virginia. I think it's going to be a mid-major head coach who's had a lot of success, who's been able to do a lot with a little, and can capitalize on the resources that West Virginia has to offer. I'm not as familiar enough with the West Virginia coaching and alumni tree as I am with Oklahoma State's, but they're not going to lure Joe Mazzulla away from the Boston Celtics, for example. but it wouldn't surprise me at all if they find somebody that has some West Virginia ties, because that's a very insular job. That's very much a community job because of the way Morgantown is within the entirety of that state. And, you know, I wouldn't surprise me at all if whoever they hired had some sort of ties to Morgantown, some sort of ties to West Virginia, maybe ties, not necessarily to Huggins, but to previous head coaches like John Boehling.
Yeah. And I think they're going to need it as well, ideally. But you're right. It's tough to sometimes make that happen. Matthew Poston's joining us on Heartland College Sports. Always good stuff, Matthew. We appreciate it, my man. We'll talk to you soon. Have a great day.
All right. You too, man.
He's Matthew Poston's. I'm Pete Mundo. This show is just on the podcast. So if you are on the podcast right now, could you drop us a 5-star on this podcast before you head out? And if you want the Heartland College Sports Koozie, leave us the 5-star rating and review, and send me a screenshot of that rating and review to Pete Mundo, M-U-N-D-O, at heartlandcollegesports.com. So appreciate you doing that as we get set for some March Madness. Now is a big time to help drive our listeners, and you can help do it in the next 15 seconds. So thank you. Appreciate you being here. Subscribe, and we'll talk to you soon on the Heartland College Sports Podcast. Take care.